And back with us here on the airwaves is the governor of the state of New Hampshire, Republican Chris Sununu. Governor, welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, guy?
I'm doing very well. So you aren't running for re-election. And I know we had sort of talked about that privately a little bit, but you feeling comfortable with that decision?
Oh, yeah. Look, I've won four terms here as governor. I'm a strong – we don't have term limits, but I'm a believer in them. And so we kind of have self-imposed term limits, if anything. And look, you just – you know, what you try to do is leave the biggest shoes to fill, leave the state in good shape. New Hampshire's in phenomenal shape right now. I'm very, very proud of that, hard work we've done. And, you know, it's just time to kind of re-enter the private sector, get I don't want to say a real job. This is – definitely a real job, but you know, get a job where I don't have to literally, you know, be in 120% 24/7, you know, for eight straight years. It'd be great just to take a step back, maybe re-enter the private sector, help some businesses, but also be involved in politics.
Kelly Ayotte, former U.S. Senator, she's running for that gig, for your gig. You a fan of hers? Have you endorsed? I haven't seen.
No, I haven't endorsed her formally. I mean, we're doing all the presidential stuff right now in New Hampshire, and there's the governor's race to replace me is definitely underway, but it really won't take center stage till probably next spring. But Kelly's wonderful, as a lot of folks know, former U.S. Senator, our former attorney general under multiple governors here. She's just got an incredible record, tons of energy. She doesn't have to do this. I mean, she kind of went into the private sector, but she just wants to serve. And so I think she'd be a great governor down the road, to be sure.
So you mentioned that you're doing the presidential stuff right now, and that's heating up. I saw you at an event recently with Ron DeSantis. You just had an event with Nikki Haley where she was sort of prodding you, hey, you're going to endorse me. Sounds like you might be getting close to making an endorsement. You were at least hinting at that. What's your thought process there?
Yeah, so my sense is, I mean, when I know, everyone else will know. I think there's two or three, maybe even four candidates here that are really running strong, and I think making a good run at it. And I'm still a big believer could even beat Trump in New Hampshire, definitely. But more importantly, you know, just finding out who that alternative to him is, right? And look, when it comes to the former president, it's not personal. It's I'm not anti-Trump per se. It's just we got to move on. Like, that's all. I mean, it's really that simple. You know, he has some good ideas and some good policies. I'm looking for a good conservative that can actually fulfill on that mission of securing the border, which he didn't do, of draining the swamp, which he didn't do, of being fiscally disciplined, which he was just terrible at. I mean, those are good Republican initiatives, conservative values that he didn't get done. We have great candidates that are running right now, strong in Iowa and New Hampshire. And, you know, he, as a former president, he barely polls at 50%. I mean, in New Hampshire, he's well under 50%. That's never a good sign either, right? And I also know that the most important thing of all, right, the one issue of 2024 for all Republicans, winning. Nothing matters more than winning in November of 24. Obviously, Trump has the biggest challenge in terms of winning in November of 24. Any of these other candidates would beat Biden. And that's what we have to get back to, being a team that wins and galvanizes. And we feel good the day after the election, not, oh, what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. When you put up bad candidates that don't galvanize and get the support of the independents, you're going to lose. Like, that's just math. It's not personal opinion. It's just math. And Trump can't do that right now. So a lot of other great options out there, and hopefully we can galvanize behind one of them.
What impresses you about DeSantis?
About Ron? Well, yeah. Look, Ron's a governor. I'm always impressed with governors, right? So governors are 24/7. They understand accountability. Senators and congressmen just, there's no sense of that. I mean, they're on vacation half the time, literally. So, you know, I want somebody who is going to give 120%, connects with voters, understands what's happening on the ground, understands, you know, someone who understands how systems work is really critical to the executive office. We haven't had it for a while. So governors are always kind of enticing to me. So I spent the full day with Ron. I did a whole bunch of stuff. We're at the diners. We were in living rooms. We were doing all the retail politics stuff. He did a good job.
What impresses you about Nikki Haley?
She's talk about a fighter, right? I mean, I think a lot of folks saw it in the first and second debate. She gives it better than as good as she takes it, more than anything. And she sticks up for herself, and she's got grit, and she's personable, and she's got that energy and that fire. And, you know, I mean, there's someone that can kind of stick it back to one of her political opponents with a smile. I mean, that's a skill and an art in itself. She is also, again, as a former governor, incredibly detail-oriented, which I think is very important. She understands how these systems work from an operational standpoint. So you have all these candidates, and let's throw former President Trump in there. He talks a good game on policy, but, Guy, as you and I know, policy is the easy part. It really is. What is the strategy to make it operational to actually get a good result? That's where the government, especially the federal government, falls apart horribly. But governors and folks that have been on the ground and work with constituents one-on-one, you want to bring that kind of retail management aspect to the executive office. That's an amazing opportunity. Nikki definitely has that, without a doubt. And she's getting people excited. Her numbers are moving. She's got a lot of political momentum here and in Iowa, as from some of the numbers I've seen. So there's no doubt people are definitely starting to look in her direction, and there's still a lot of voters that have not decided. I was at an event with her this morning. Half of the room was with her. Half of the room was completely undecided. Everything was on the table. So, you know, she's out there earning those votes, and that's just what you have to do on the ground here. Most people won't decide who they're voting for till sometime after Thanksgiving.
So you mentioned a little while ago here that you felt that the race is still wide open for the Republican nomination. I saw that quote from you the other day, and you were noting that in some of these polls, Trump is, you know, around 50% or below 50% in some of these early states, but he's still up by like 30 points in these places. It doesn't really seem like a wide open race because those numbers have been, they'll bounce around a tiny bit, but it's been just locked in stone, like frozen in ice here, month after month after month, with a very strong base for Trump, with a significant double-digit lead in all of these early states. So what is it about the current moment and what you've been seeing for weeks, let's say, that makes you still believe and still say out loud you think that this race is very fluid and wide open?
Well, look, of course he's going to lead by double digits because he's running against four, five, six people right now, right? As when he gets to one-on-one, if he's at 50% or less, which he would likely be less, he loses, right? So if it's a one-on-one race, 50% is not necessarily a great number, especially if you're a former president.
With respect, Governor, and you know I'm not a big supporter at all of the former president, but that assumes that everyone would consolidate who's not with Trump right now behind whoever this other person is. But I've seen numbers showing that, for example, a lot of DeSantis fans, if it weren't DeSantis, they'd support Trump over Nikki Haley and you know, vice versa. It's not like 100% when someone drops out, everyone just immediately stampedes over to this other person. Trump will
totally
gain some folks.
True, but again, if Trump, I mean, where the conversation is happening in a place like New Hampshire, Trump's at, what, 42, 43%? Some polls had him in high 30s, some polls had him in higher 40s. So let's say it's mid to low 40s, right? And yeah, you're right, maybe 5, 6, 7, 10% of the DeSantis vote might go over there. So it really becomes a true one-on-one toss-up race. And now it isn't, oh, Trump's the fait accompli. It's, oh, my God, Trump might lose this thing. And in politics, that's the worst message you could possibly have, right? And then all the realities, then Trump actually has to, whether it's get on a debate stage or start taking the race more seriously and start challenging the other candidate, whoever it might be, one-on-one. And that's the worst thing Trump would want, right? Because that means he's lost all the momentum. Somebody else has it. He has to answer for his lack of policies, his, you know, where he says he handled the pandemic just fine, and him and Fauci were on that stage day after day. There's a lot of anti-vax folks out there that can't stand the way Trump handled that thing. He's got to be called to it in the conservative base, and they're going to go somewhere else, right? I mean, that could even be a third party. So there's just so much to be played here. Even one-third of Trump voters said they would consider moving to somewhere else. So, yeah, you're right. Maybe if DeSantis were to get out, his voters don't go there, or if someone else gets out, their voters go back to Trump. But even some of Trump's voters could move. So there's still a lot here, guys. It's like November 2nd, and we've already gotten it down to about four or five candidates, tops. That is more of a winnowed field than we've had in 20 years at this point in the race. So a lot of opportunity to make it a one-on-one race.
So you said a lot of people will make their decisions after Thanksgiving. Does that mean that your endorsement would probably come after Thanksgiving? And is your number one criteria just looking at the polling and what you're seeing on the ground and saying this person is closest and would have the best chance of consolidating folks and maybe giving Trump a run for his money? Is that your number one focus?
No, not at all. I don't look at the polling. I mean, I see the polling, of course, but that doesn't influence who I'd get behind. I'm going to get behind the person that I think really is connecting with voters, Because if they're connecting with voters here, it tells me they can connect with voters in other states. It tells me that they have a ground game in other places. It can't just be about Iowa and New Hampshire. You got to have a long game here to connect with folks for the long term, especially when it comes to the Super Tuesday states, right? Because that's going to be very big. If Trump runs the table Super Tuesday, it's over. But if it's one-on-one before then, and somebody else can make it a race on Super Tuesday, that's the key. That's the real demarcator there. And that doesn't happen until March of 24, right? So we're still ways away from that. So I'm just looking at folks that are connecting with people, and I talk to my voters. I think New Hampshire is the smartest voting base in the country.
Voting very, very seriously, as you know, and you're testing the waters with them. And you've got your ear to the ground. Fascinating stuff. We look forward to having you back. Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire, thank you so much, sir.
You bet. Thank you, brother. Be good.